What's up, Grizz Nation? Welcome to the show. We got the entire crew here tonight. There is an absolute boatload of stuff to talk about. If you know anything about the Grizzlies, hell, I don't even think you have to know anything about the Grizzlies. If you just turn your TV on right now, somebody that has no idea what's going on in Memphis is running their mouth about stuff that's going on in Memphis. So we're going to talk about the Ja Morant stuff. We're going to talk about the game, the loss to the Clippers without Ja Morant, and the loss of Brandon Clark for the season, torn Achilles. That's scary. That might be more than just this season. That might be the majority of next season as well. So that's terrible news for Brandon Clark. But we got a lot to get into. I'm just going to let you know, if you have a weak stomach, if you are soft, if you are easily offended, go ahead and shut this episode off. We're not going to pull any punches. We're going to tell you what we think about the situation. We're going to tell you what we think about some of the people running their mouth about the situation. And we're going to talk about basketball. If you don't want to listen to that, that's cool. Come back next episode. We'll be talking about strictly basketball. But what's going on right now is far too big for us not to address it on this show. And to be honest with you, we know more about what's going on with this team than 75 to 80% of the people on national media that's running their mouth that don't have a damn clue. So yep, we'll jump into it. Guys, how have you been? It's been a little bit. I was gone last week. I was in Evansville covering the OVC tournament. Had a blast. It was incredible. OVC does not have any NBA prospects in it right now. Not at this time. Some guys may develop into it, but I enjoyed it. That was my first postseason college basketball experience. I got to call a few games for UT Martin, and I got to watch some crazy finishes. And yeah, I was there. I got to see the fight. That was
the fight. I was just about to say, bring the fight up. Yeah. Like, that was a crazy tournament, man.
Man, it was nuts. I went to bed on Thursday night. I shut my ringer off so I could sleep. And I wake up Friday morning and I have like 37 text messages. Well, I'm in a group chat with people from work and I'm thinking, okay, like they just blew up the group chat. No, that was like 7 messages. I had like 15 or 16 people. Dude, were you called to the game that the fight happened? It's like, man, that game. Here's the thing. The story of that game should not be that fight. The story of that game should be Jordan Sears. This man, if he was 6'4", 6'5", he would be first-round NBA talent. Like, the amount of heart, the toughness, everything that he brings to the game, he is absolutely incredible. He went down in that game, and he was helped off the floor. Like, they basically carried him off of the floor, and he was able to come back, and he drops a career-high 33 points, and UT Martin wins. But that game will forever and always be remembered by people that were not there because of the fight that happened. And I'm just like, man, it's heartbreaking because there was some great basketball in that game.
Yeah, man, I was going to say, I was checking in on it because I knew you were recovering and calling it. And I've made a lot of close games. I mean, it was a wild tournament. You did have to fight, man. There was a lot of stuff going on in that game. Big time comebacks, big time blown leads, obviously on the other side of that. So yeah, that was a good one to cover, man. A lot of stuff going on there. But man, back on the Grizzly side, man, it's been a rough weekend. It's actually been a rough year. I was tweeting about this the other day, and I was asking the question, like, how did we get here? Someone asked a question, I can't remember who it was, asked me, is this the toughest season for a team in the position that the Grizzlies are? I mean, the Grizzlies are still currently the second seed right now, and it's been a rough season. I mean, even going back to the summer, of different opinions of direction of the team and fans going back and forth, you're always going to get some of that, but it felt like it was a lot for a really good team over the summer. Now you got, we mentioned at the top of the show, Brandon Clark out for the rest of this season, and with that injury, possibly the majority of next season, man, big loss. I hate that for him. I know his teammates are really hate that. You hate to see a guy like that go down, because you go back to the playoffs last year. I mean, if it wasn't for him, man, they don't win that series against Minnesota. I mean, he's just fantastic in that series. So that's going to be a big loss and definitely a big, dip in your depth, which I think is already a question mark on this team. Even outside of the stuff on the basketball court, I mean, you got the team continue to blow leads in the fourth quarter, just rotation stuff. I think coaching issues with Taylor Jenkins and some of his game management. And none of that is the biggest topic right now. The biggest topic right now is Ja Morant. And David was talking about that you don't even have to be from Memphis and know anything about basketball. From what I've heard, it was on Good Morning America this morning. They were talking about the Ja Morant stuff. So that lets you know how out of control this situation has gotten. And I've been kind of touching on it all day. It's been extremely toxic. I haven't really been responding to anybody. I just put my thoughts out there and getting a lot of wild replies. I didn't respond to them because I'm trying my best to stay out of the toxicity on Twitter because it gets really bad. But for me, on the Ja Morant stuff, I've been a defender of it. The situation at his house with the kid, the mall stuff, all that stuff was like a year ago. So before this last incident came out, you could say, okay, well, maybe this stuff is old. This stuff happened a year ago. Maybe he's turned a corner. Maybe he's kind of matured on from this stuff and realized that this is stuff that he can't be involved in. And then this video drops after the game on Denver at the strip club. He's on IG Live brandishing a gun. And once that happened, you're like, okay, well, this is a real issue. Like, he hasn't learned at all. Like, that was one of the most unself-aware things I've ever seen. I mean, just to have these situations come out, you're talking about him brandishing, just pulling a gun on the kid. That's what a lot of people say, are having a gun on him. There's some people that said he had a gun at the mall, which I don't know we don't know what's true and what's not in these situations. But just to have that out there about you and then come out with this video flashing a gun on IG Live, man, it's just ridiculous. And that right there shows you, like, at that point, like, I can't really defend you anymore. His actions, he has to mature. He got the 2-game suspension. Taylor Jenkins said he's going to be out indefinitely. So he's going to step away from the team, puts the statement out that says that he's going to try to seek the help that he needs. Nike and the NBA have both said that they're happy to see him being proactive. But he has to find whatever help he needs. But my issue has been with the national media. You have Skip and Shannon on Undisputed this morning talking about speculating whether he's a gang member, a member of the Crips. You got Kendrick Perkins talking about extending this to other guys on the team, saying he's not the only ones. He's bringing up Jaren Jackson Jr. and Desmond Bane, who haven't done anything on social media while or anything. You haven't ever seen them posting themselves with a gun or anything like that. I don't know what he's talking about, but this thing's just got out of hand. And it's for me, man, I'm willing to, Ja Morant is 23 years old. Like, I'm willing to give him time. The book is nowhere near written on him. There's a lot of people that are writing him off. Oh, he's a thug. He's this. I mean, he needs to be in jail, all this. Ja Morant hasn't killed anybody. He hasn't done anything other than things that make it a bad look for himself, that he can't. He's let his teammates down. He's let his family down. He hasn't done anything, as we know, of illegal. Now, there is an investigation with the gun and everything like that, but he hasn't done anything like that. There are other guys. You talk about Bridges in Charlotte, the stuff that he's done. You don't even hear about those situations being talked about like that. So I'm willing to give him time to prove himself. I mean, guys have come back from worse, much worse than this and redeemed themselves. And I just hate to see the national media taking this narrative and under the veil of advice, quote advice, when they're coming from a place of they're just trying to get clicks, it's clickbait, they're just trying to get views, and they don't really give a damn about Ja Morant, the man, and him trying to come out on the better side of this. That's not their angle. Some people are trying to pretend like that's their angle, and it's not. They're just trying to do this for publicity, and I hate to see them down a young man like this, and I hate to bring up race, because I'm not that guy that always makes everything's black, white, everything's this, but to see a guy like Shannon Sharp, you got a young African-American athlete, and instead of doing what you've seen some other people, like Steven Jackson, has said made some great points, Jalen Rose, Paul Pierce has touched on this, and I love what they had to say, but you got Shannon Sharp on there on a daily basis going the opposite direction, and it's like he's just trying to bring him down and tarnish his name instead of trying to build him up and say, okay, man, he needs to work on this, but he has a chance to, he's still young enough to redeem himself from this. And that's not the angle that he's coming from. And I hate to see that. I just hate to see that from Shannon. It's disappointing. And it's just a lot, man, right now. But I'm willing to let Ja take all the time he needs because this is not something that's going to resolve itself in two games. I mean, he needs to do some self-reflection. He needs to listen to his family. His family needs to rally around him, and he needs to figure some things out because the direction that he's going is not good. Because right now, these are small situations, but these small situations can very well turn into something much, much worse very quickly. It doesn't take much. There's a thin line between the stuff we're seeing now and something that he might not be able to come back from, and that's my biggest worry. So I'm more as a concerned about John Morant as a human, the basketball stuff. We know how talented he is. If he can get that right, he'll be fine on the basketball floor. Right now, it's just all about John Morant and him getting the help and him working through whatever demons he's working through.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say, looking at this from an overall arcing point of view, the temptation is to wonder kind of what got us here. And I think it's a combination of things. I think a lot gets lost in all the nuances of what's going on with John Morant. But the reality is, we talked about it a lot last year because it was talked about in a fun way. The unprecedented success, basically, and the historical success of the Grizzlies having a team this successful, this young, so quickly. It's really, I mean, outside of the OKC, you know, Kevin Durant, that group, like, it's really not been done. And at this point, I mean, they're still second in the West as of right now. It's been done in back-to-back years. And so I think you're seeing, as a result, unprecedented storylines. Like, these storylines haven't really seen before because they're not – a lot of young teams get to do and make their mistakes under the radar, right? They get to do those things before they have the bona fide superstar that's all NBA, before they got these all-star – you know, before they're thrust into the – before they hit the main stage. And I think to some extent, the Grizzlies, the players, some of their young, immature, rowdy ways were kind of postponed for a couple reasons. One, COVID, like in the bubble, like that they really spent about, I'd say, for a better part of 2 years being extremely limited in what they were even able to do as young players in this league. So I think you saw a more disciplined, road-ready team. I mean, because there weren't a ton of options out here. I'd say this past year or last season was probably their real first opportunity, in my opinion. You guys can chime in, but from what I'm looking at, for everything, the world is their oyster. COVID's kind of over. So you've seen some delay in that when other young teams were going through that, where they had the opportunity to go through that in their rookie year, their sophomore year. That's just not been the case with this team for circumstances of their own. And then you look at it from the perspective, from Josh's perspective, you know, he just moved out of his family's house.
Yeah. You know, that's what I mean? Big contract.
Like, he just got this because he got this contract. He's got all these endorsements and stuff that he's working on for years. And he's never been in this situation before up until, as a full grown NBA player, the guy was living at home with his parents. He bought them all a mansion, you know, and it was just this summer that he moved across the street and let them that house. And so I think you're seeing a combination of things from, I don't know the extent of which, you know, young teams go through this, but I'm pretty sure that all young teams go through these growing pains, these learning lessons, but they don't have to do it to the same extent because they're generally not this successful. It's kind of irrelevant. Nobody's paying attention to the ins and outs of the party life of the Houston Rockets. Nobody's really talking about that because they're not there yet. They haven't met that stage. So that puts the Memphis Grizzlies in a particularly unique situation. And it was fun last year, but I think the city, the players, the team, everybody's experiencing sort of the other side of that. And I agree with a lot of what Isaac said in terms of how people are kind of dehumanizing the whole situation. People just can't seem to fathom or understand why Ja would have to take some time to get away from the team to get better or to get his mental right. People don't understand the stresses that come with that essentially overnight. I mean, the city and the chances of getting a championship rest on the shoulders of Ja. I'm sure he feels that weight. That's not easy. It's not easy navigating, you know, this new business side he's got. Nobody from Memphis had a shoe deal. Not like this. I mean, we talked about that before. Like, there's been no real business ventures. He's the first athlete in 5 years to have a partnership with Powerade and stuff like this drop. So he's just, and he himself is navigating unprecedented territory. And so is the team. It's really easy to look on the outside and say, you shouldn't be stressed. You got so much success. But I think people continue to forget sometimes more money, more problems. That's how that works. A lot of times you get more money and it leads to other situations and things that people just don't consider. And then you get less empathy as a result of it. So I don't stand by the things going on by John Morant. Well, it's a recent situation. I don't stand by that. I do think up to that situation with the IG live video, a lot of it had been overblown in my personal opinion. I think from a media perspective, some of those things were overblown. Even the Daily Memphian article about him, his mom getting an altercation, him coming up, the word with a report is supposed that he made a reference looking for the employee after he got off to the mall security cop and pulled off. I think a lot of that was overblown, but he absolutely did himself, no favors. He got himself into a world of trouble by trying to feed into that narrative, hanging around the wrong guys. And I hope for him, this is genuinely a wake up call, because I agree with Isaac. I care about the guy. A lot of people will say he's always been this guy. He's always been this terrible dude. And that's just not been the case. The kid's always been confident, but he's always had a sort of humbleness, a good balance, you could tell. And lately that's been a little bit more, you know, winning in one way than the other, but and people hate him because of it. And, you know, you have a right to hate, but as a result, you see a lot of the really the bullying attempt just from the media and people at large kind of attacking him. But I support Ja. I really hope he takes this chance that it doesn't get any worse. That's kind of where I stand on it, that this really is what it takes for him to, you know, get himself right, get himself in the right headspace, and get back to being the great player that he is, because he's just too talented and too much ahead of him to get caught up in this kind of thing. He's got plenty of time in his career, like Isaac said, to make this up. I really hope to see that's the case. But I just hope other people take a step back and really pay attention to all the little things that happened along the way that ultimately led us to this moment. And hopefully, I don't say you can get worse, because it's always like jinxing it, but hopefully we got to look for more things to look forward to from this point here from a Grizzlies perspective.
Yeah, real quickly, I want to add to that. People, when you talk about the mental health and taking time, there's a lot of people that chime in making jokes. What do you mean mental health? He just needs to stop doing this and stop doing that. And add to it, he's also a young co-parent and father. I mean, that's another angle to that. He has a lot. I mean, as Candace mentioned, he has a lot of weight on his shoulders. He has that. I mean, he has a sister that's playing basketball, doing some things. I mean, he has the generational wealth to take care of his family. I mean, he has that, like Candace said, the pressure on him to try to bring a championship to his team. He's young and has a lot of stuff on his plate. I know a lot of people said a lot of people would kill to be in that situation, but like you said, more money can cause more problems. Just money doesn't solve everything.
People would kill to be in that situation. The bottom line is, you can say that comment, but you're not in that situation, so you don't know. Have a freaking clue. You have no idea what this man is dealing with, and that's, we see of a fraction of a very, very small fraction of this man's life, and people are out here assuming that they know what the hell's going on with him. Mm-hmm. And that's the furthest thing from the truth, man. That, like, that statement, I get, like, I agree. What would I give up to have the kind of talent that Ja Morant has? And the list is long, like, it's extremely long, but he's human, and he's, I want to look at it from a few, like, there's three different things that I want to look at in this, and I'll let you finish and then I'll go through my stuff. So if you had something else, Isaac, go ahead. I didn't mean to talk over you, but that,
it
burns me up, man, because like, you ask anybody in the world, like, what would you give up for that kind of talent? And for everybody, or 99.9% of people, the list is going to be long of what they would give up to get that kind of talent. But let's take let's remove the basketball out of this completely. This is a Grizzlies podcast. We're going to talk about basketball, but remove it out of it completely. This is a 23-year-old kid, and anybody that's living right now that's older than 23, if you can look me in the face and tell me that you didn't do dumb shit when you were 23 years old,
right?
Congratulations to you. You're part of a minority, because when I was 23, I was dumb as hell. I was making all kinds of mistakes. I didn't have the spotlight on me. I didn't have the money that Ja Morant has. I didn't have the opportunity to put myself into situations like he did. If I had, I'd probably be buried under a jail somewhere because I messed it up so bad. So you have to, there's a level of maturity that has to happen. And then I want to talk about the money part of it. I have family members that can't even manage their damn income tax refunds.
Yeah.
And we're talking about millions of dollars, and there's folks out here that when they get a $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 income tax refund, they're out here quitting their jobs. and it's you look how many people have won the lottery and then very, very quickly turn around and went broke after.
Broke. Yep. Yep.
Just because money doesn't solve all of your problems at all. Like that's something. Oh, if you had all this money, if you had just all kinds of unlimited resources, would that take a level of stress off of your plate? Yeah, it would. It would remove some stuff, but it's going to add other things. And you guys talked about the fact that he's a father, the fact, you know, like he is so close-knit, tight-knit with his family. Mm-hmm. Like all of these things are changing for him.
Yeah.
And when you end up with money like that, people that were not in your circle before, they're going to come knocking, because there's a lot of vultures. I can't remember the name of the documentary, but it was about, oh man, Isaac, I know you're going to know his name. He was an Alabama running back that got drafted to the Raiders. I think the Browns. I'm sorry. Was it Trent Richardson?
Trent Richardson. Yeah, Trent Richardson. Yeah.
There was a documentary on Trent Richardson, and it was talking about the money, you know, because Trent Richardson, when he got drafted, like he made a lot of money quick, but because he wasn't careful with his circle, like this man is still doing, like any opportunity he gets to make money, he's still out there doing it, because a lot of the money that he made is gone. Because he had people in his circle that did not have his best interests at heart. And I don't know. I can't sit here and tell you with certainty that that is something that Ja Morant has. But I will tell you, based off of the number of people that I've seen around him, and I've said this before we got to where we are right now, I've said Ja needs to shrink his circle.
Yeah.
You have 100%. It's very, very difficult. I can't even imagine how difficult it is to be in the position that he is in and have to determine. Jalen Rose said it when he was, and I'm glad that you mentioned him, Isaac, because he's one that I felt like that was sincere. Yeah. Out of all the BS that we're seeing from Skip and Shannon and, you know, Stephen A, like there's a lot of people that are not sincere with this stuff. I felt like Jalen was sincere, and he said, people come into your life for one of four reasons, and you have to determine what that reason is. They come in to add, subtract, multiply, or divide. And so Ja Morant is in a position where he's on a team that's second in the West. He's got to put focus on winning. When does he have time to determine what these people are in his life for? When does he have time to decipher, okay, is this person in my life to take away from me? Are they in here to add to me? And so that's why his circle, shrinking it down to people that you 100% absolutely know that you can trust, I think that that would be huge for him. I don't know what's going to happen, but I will say this now, and I'm going to continue. I support Ja Morant. I strongly considered throwing on one of my jerseys and posting a picture just because this crap is happening. All kinds of stuff happens off of the floor, like off, whether it's football, baseball, basketball, hell, there's a video out right now. You can YouTube it. This guy is talking about criminal convictions and he's just running down the list, and he talks for like 7 minutes about all the convictions, and it's members of the U.S. Congress. That's who he's running off. So there's people at all levels that make mistakes. There's people that are representing this country at the highest level that make mistakes. And John Morant's getting crucified right now. Like, I know why. I know why, because he's a young up-and-coming superstar, and he does have that level of confidence. He is a guy. I was talking with Chris about this. Chris is the voice of the UT Martin Skyhawks. He's the one that gave me the opportunity to call the games with him. We were talking about Ja Morant, and he said, you know, it's crazy how things happen in life and how it leads you to certain areas. Like, what happens if the New York Knicks get the 2 pick and they end up with Ja Morant, or if the Grizzlies get the number 1 pick and they end up with Zion Williamson? And I said, if Ja was playing somewhere else, I'd probably hate his freaking guts because of that confidence. When a player is that good, it's a love him or hate him type of thing. You know, with the exception of Giannis, I think he's the only superstar that is universally loved. But like Steph Curry, you love him or you hate him. And that's just like, I don't hate him as a person. I don't know him on a personal level, but I hate him when he's playing against my team.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. So he's got all this money he has to learn how to control. He's 23 years old. And now because he has this money, he's taken more of a leadership role, and not only on the team, but in the family dynamic. And that's a lot of pressure, on a 23-year-old. And I hate it. You know, Candace mentioned the word empty. Because he has all of this money, he gets nothing from anybody. He's supposed to, this money makes you invincible. You're supposed to just take all this stuff and walk right through it and not let it affect you. Well, that'd be great if that could happen, but that's not what's happening. And so now the fans, the organization, his family need to rally around him and hope and pray that he recovers, because if not, this organization's in trouble.
And if you talk about the mental health aspect, you go back a few years ago and you watched this one-on-one interview he did with Taylor Rooks about the bubble. And if you listen to him, you could kind of see some of the things he said. I don't know if you guys have seen that interview.
Yeah.
But he talked about him hearing more about everybody else around him, and kind of he's smiling inside, but he doesn't really worry about himself. He just kind of worries about everybody around him, and he tries to deal with stuff on his own. She kind of asked him about would he ever seek help, going to see counseling or anything, that she had talked to some other former NBA players that talked about how much counseling had helped them. And he said that's something that he may reach out for one day, but that he has a lot of things going on inside of him that he just has always just kind of try to deal with on his own internally. He doesn't talk about it. He say he doesn't like talking about it because he just cares about his family and his friends and stuff and what they're going through. And he just kind of deals with some of this stuff on his own.
Yeah.
And that was a few years ago. And that, I think he, and it seemed genuine. It didn't seem like he was just talking for the interview. Like a lot of times, sometimes people get an interview and they'll just kind of go along with what the person was asking him. I didn't get that sense at all. I get the sense that he was really dealing with some stuff, like some stuff was heavy on him, and that he was working through, and he wasn't really talking about it. And that stuff builds up, and a lot of people kind of handle things in different ways. Some people turn to alcohol, different substances. They party when they put on this image that they're everything's great and everything's happy, and that kind of stuff kind of helps them cope a little bit with some of the things that are going on in their lives. And they lash out, they do different things that might be normally out of character for them. And I think that could be what we're seeing here. I think he could have this stuff going on, and the way he kind of deals with this stuff is like, okay, well, I'm just going to go out and party and do all this stuff, and I'm just going to try to forget about it. And that sometimes can get out of control. I mean, I think that might be what we've seen here, especially, again, in the African-American community, especially with men, a lot of men, that it's the stigma that they don't reach out for help. Like, that means you're weak or you're soft if you reach out for help, and you just kind of deal with things however you try to deal with them. And sometimes that's not a good thing. So as I said, I mean, I hope he takes this time and figure out and works through whatever he's dealing with. A lot of people have speculated that it's alcohol that he's turned to, and that could be an issue with him, and maybe he needs to clean that up. You talk about clean up the circle, because, I mean, again, man, you're out doing this stuff, and a lot of times you see this stuff, and he has his entourage around him, and I know these are his guys. These are guys that I've been around him ever since he was a kid. I mean, he's brought his friends along from South Carolina, a lot of guys that played with him at Murray State. These guys are still in his circle. But sometimes those guys, they're just going to be yes men. I mean, you're the guy with the money. You're the popular guy. You're flashing. You helping them. You're buying them stuff. And you're out balling. And they're just going to continue with their lifestyle. They're not going to tell you, man, you probably shouldn't be doing this. You probably shouldn't be doing that. And it's a lot of, when you don't have anybody that – this is a thin line, because a lot of people try to talk about T and him just kind of being more like a friend to him instead of a father. I can't really speak to that dynamic. I mean, I see T, like I said, T is enjoying the life. There's no question about that, but I can't speak on their private conversation and what T and Jamie have tried to tell him, if they try to tell him, well, maybe you shouldn't do this and shouldn't do that. But at the end of the day, he's 23 years old, so they can't make him do anything. And that's the thing a lot of people say, well, his parents must be terrible. And I don't believe that at all. I think maybe he should kind of, and like I said, I hate to say it because I don't know everything that is going on in their dynamic, but maybe be less of part of his entourage and say, hold on, man, we need to kind of dial this stuff back a bit. I mean, he made a statement. He kind of, it was on both sides, kind of defended his job, but also kind of admitted that they needed to go in a different direction. So a lot of times once you get in the position that Ja's in, you have a lot of people around you that kind of enable you to do that stuff. And sometimes you have to step back and take a look at who do I want to keep around me? Who are the people that are going to be positive influences and that are going to tell me, okay, man, this is not what we should be doing, because this is a bad look for you. You're a guy that has Nike endorsement, Powerade endorsements, just all kind of Under Armour, man, just all kind of stuff. That he was doing body armor. I mean, not Under Armour, body armor. Yeah. It's just a lot of stuff that you can't do. I mean, and you see when you have other people around you doing stuff and you're John Morant, they're not going to talk about DTAP and all the rest of these guys, what they're doing. It's all going to be John Morant did this, John Morant's doing this, John Morant was involved with that. So he's going to have to make some decisions, man. I think he probably needs to hire a PR team, a publicist, that just being on Twitter and just kind of being a normal person on Twitter like he kind of does, it's kind of a blessing and a curse, because sometimes it's good for you to interact with the fans, but also you see what it can create. So there's a lot of things that he's going to have to clean up and look in the mirror and say, okay, what can I do to change this? And what can I do to make sure that I always got positive influences around me? I think that's the biggest thing. And I think he needs to rally around his family. You know, the team, the front office, Taylor Jenkins, they're and his teammates are all going to rally around him. Tyus said he's talked to him. Jaren said he's talked to him as well. And that he's definitely, there's an emotional aspect to it, and that he's not necessarily in a great place right now. And I can imagine, man, because the whole world's kind of talking about this situation, even people that don't know anything about sports. I mean, this is just taking legs and become has a mind of his own right now. I mean, it's everywhere. You can't go anywhere without hearing about this stuff with John Morant. So I'm just, like I said, I'm not closing a book on him at all. He just needs to take the time to figure out whatever he needs to figure out, man, come back and get back in the dark. Like you said, man, work in the dark. That's what you want to hear, man, about him working in the dark, getting his game better. The rest of this stuff, that's not what we need, man. Just get back with, you're super talented, man. Just one of the greatest players in the world, has a chance to be all-time great, man. Let's get all this other stuff cleaned up and get back to that and come back and start terrorizing the league again, man. That's all I want to see for him, man. It's just tough to see him going through this. But I guess it's a positive that he's young and still has a lot of time to bounce back from it.
Yeah, so to add to your point, I wanted to add in to the specific context about the Taylor Rook interview that you're talking about. The specific quote, one of the quotes that stands out to me is, you don't realize you're drowning until you're trying to be everybody else.
Yeah.
Like, and that's real. Like that's real to me. That seems genuine. You know what I mean? Like, that feels like somebody who's even at that time, you know, lost. And at least my stance from what I see on the T thing, I think there might, I mean, I'm sure there's some way that he could be, you know, more of a father figure, but I've never really gotten that entourage vibe. So one, I think a lot of it's just him wanting to support his son.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of always been their dynamic from the beginning. Like seeing his dad's been a big part of his business, his basketball. They kind of always been it together. And I think I've always gotten the impression, at least, that his dad is kind of just wants to be there to watch out for us. In fact, I watched this father's interview with like NBA fathers, incoming guys. I think it was like Carl Anthony Towns' dad and like Chris Paul's dad a few years ago, right? Basically right when Ja was like pretty much a rookie. And he's kind of saying like he wanted to be like more image on positive fathers. And he wanted to be there in a circle to help protect him from some of the stuff that happens in the league. So I've always gotten the impression that while I understand why it does look like, you know, it's more of a friendship thing. And I'm not saying that, you know, I don't know the internal dynamics like Isaac, but I think it's more balanced than people give it credit for. I'll say that much. I think his family does give him good sound advice. I remember I watched some of Josh stuff in the offseason. You know, he does documentaries and things where his mom is telling him, like, get off social media so much. You know what I mean? Like, he said that his mom, you know, would tell him stuff like that, and he just, you know, he'll try, or he, you know, wouldn't do a good job. Now, this year, I'll say this, what's interesting is, this year, I think, has been his most quiet year on social media, for the most part. I mean, outside of his videos, like, in terms of him going back and forth with fans and stuff, like, I think he's actually kind of calmed that down, and maybe that's what leads to some more of these other outlet stuff, like, maybe he's partying more because of, I don't know, but I know something that Danny Green mentioned when he first came on the team, and you kind of, you know, for the most part, in terms of him going back and forth with fans, that hadn't really been the case this season. It's been, you know, other headlines and stuff that's really been taken, you know, from position, but yeah, man, it's you know, it's a tough situation, tough time, honestly, all around to be a Grizzlies fan, follow this team. It's hard to watch, but you know, I have full confidence in the young man. He's made out of the right stuff, in my opinion. And if I know anything about the city, I'm a born and raised Memphian, is that Memphis backs up their people, period. So I know people are maybe disappointed with him or maybe wanted things to go differently, but at the end of the day, I 100% feel like this city is behind Ja Morant 100%, and the whole world may not be, and it's back to Memphis versus everybody. It's really always what it was anyway.
It ain't back to it. It's been that.
Yeah,
that's I was talking to my everybody son was on about board
last today. Year, but it at the end of the day, like you said, when it comes down to it, it's Memphis versus everybody, and that's just where we're back at. And honestly, you know, it tears down the expectation for the team. I think this team needs to just regroup as a whole, like reevaluating everything for a team that's so big on culture. Maybe it's time for the front office to step back and really think about, you know, as that progresses, what does that look like, and what should the continued culture be? Because there can be some negative things to come out of what was ultimately started out to be so positive and great last year. So tough time, we'll get through it. I have the utmost confidence that Ja Morant will ultimately make this a redemption story arc for sure.
Yeah, I just wonder, you know, the report about the team meeting saying that they need to kind of rein it in when they're on the road, because if you look at the road record is bad. The Grizzlies, yeah, at home, they're 26-5 at the FedEx Forum, and they're 8 games below 500 on the road at 12-20. And so whether Shams, I don't even know how you pronounce it.
Yeah, Shams.
Shams. Yeah. Like, whether he got that 100% right or not, the proof is in the record. You can look, yeah, and see that there is something that they are not doing on the road. And so you have to figure that out, because you're going to have to win on the road in the playoffs. If you don't finish as the number one seed, and my guess is, you know, we don't have a firm timetable on when Ja comes back to this team. Maybe it's a couple weeks. Maybe it's in April. Maybe it's not for the rest of the season. We don't know what it's going to be at this point. And so you've got to do something to figure out, okay, what's going on the road that's not happening at home. And, yeah, the road is going to be tough. There's not many teams that are just absolutely scorching on the road. You know, the Bucks are 7 games above. The Celtics are 8 games above 500. Like, the top three in the East are well above 500. And then when you look in the West, like the Nuggets are 16-15, so they're barely above 500. Yeah. And the Kings are 18-13. And then as you continue to scroll down the list in the West, it's not much of anything. Like a lot of teams are under 500 in the West on the road. But that's still like the discrepancy, the 26-5 at home and 12-20 on the road is a massive gap. So the coaching staff, the front office, there's a lot that needs to be done. And when they had that meeting, from what the report says, and I don't know how accurate this is right now, but my understanding is the meeting happened and then this thing with the gun happened the next night.
Yep.
So what is that going to do to the locker room? What is that going to do? You know, Steven Adams says something like that. Is he going to lose desire to play with these guys? Are you going to see, you know, the biggest thing that they had going was the culture, the way, you know, like how much fun that they were having on the floor and the way that they supported, the way they rallied around each other. After a conversation like that, then you see the video of him doing this stuff. How much is it going to impact the other players on the team? And you have to hope that their relationship was strong enough that it's not going to be much of an impact. But the truth is, we don't really know. And there's a lot of stuff that happens behind closed doors that we don't know. I'm not going to dive into speculation about all this teams imploding from the inside out, because there's no indication that that is happening, other than the fact that we see Ja Morant kind of imploding on himself right now. So it's, I don't know, it's a very slippery slope. And my hope is that they can do something to right this ship. I want to gear more toward
I was going to say real quick, I want to touch on the meeting thing. People are speculating that meeting happened around the Denver game, but no one ever said that. There's been no reporting. Sean didn't say that meeting took place. Then people just kind of took that as, okay, well, he said a meeting happened, so that meant it happened that day or the night before, and then John still went out. It's never been reported that when that meeting was. That could have been a month ago or 2 months ago. Nobody really knows when that meeting is, but Sean didn't say that. So that's, I just kind of wanted to add that, and people have kind of been speculating all where they had the meeting, and then Ja went out anyway. That there was no indication that meeting was that the day before or anything like that. I just wanted to add that in. So it could have been, but there's no proof that that's when it was. So just wanted to add that.
Speaking of culture and things like that, I will say, if anything, I would hope that bring Steven Adams' words more true. I think it's probably, just from what I know about these guys, more likely effect, you know, seeing the repercussions of everything. That's my hope. And like I said, I don't know when the meeting was, but if anything, my hope is that did not cause division locker room. But I've been wondering about this, because this has been another aspect we haven't talked about, it because there's been so many other implosions happening with the Grizzlies right now. But Dylan Brooks was suspended the last game because of his technical fouls, and there's been a lot surrounding Dylan Brooks in terms of him getting in these more fights and scrimmages and these, I will go more physical plays, with some that look dirty, you know, speculative dirty type plays. And that's been part of this kind of cloud hovering over the Grizzlies as well. Myself, I mean, before we got to this point, it was, you know, the Dylan suspension and, you know, him, because this has been a lot of scrimmages, him going back and forth. He's always seems to be in the middle of it whenever these scrimmages happen. So I just wanted your guys' thoughts in terms of, from the front office perspective, culture. And I know Dylan's always been the heart and the soul of this team culture-wise. But something I've been kind of wondering about, is that what's best? Like, is that what the team needs? And that's something I haven't come to a conclusion on myself necessarily, but just given everything else that's been happening, I just sort of wonder if all the macho bravado, to some extent, is doing more harm than good, at least at this moment.
Man, for me, the Dylan stuff it's super polarizing, and it's tough, because I've never been one of the on the terms of people's get rid of Dylan. We got to get him out of here. I've never been that guy, but because I understand the impact that he has on this team defensively. I mean, there's no question that a lot of people even try to argue against that. And there's no argument about what he brings on the defensive end, in my opinion, at all. It shouldn't be anyway. But you do see all this other stuff. And he's just from night to night, you just never know what you're going to get from him. One night you'll say, okay, well, yeah, that's what we need to see from him. And then the next game, he'll go completely back to what people complain about taking bad shots, taking shots out of the offense. It's just, I don't know what the answer is to that. Because I know in the past you would say this, and now with all this stuff going on, we don't know what's going on. You would say that he was the heart and soul of this team and everybody loves him. And this season has been kind of different. I mean, we've been seeing with the suspension. You seems like every game now he's getting into it with people, whether that's right or wrong, whether not to say he has comments that he's making, and I think that don't do the team any favors.
Yeah.
It's just that's a tough.
Really what I'm not even talking about the offensive shots. I just mean from a, like, you know, his person, just from what we say is the coach, like his personality, his heart, all of that. It just seems to be causing a lot of extra problems, at least in my opinion. And I don't know what to do with that information, but it's something that I've been thinking about too, just from an overall team perspective.
Yeah. It's just about, I guess, if they let him walk, which I feel like was a mistake, because if they ended up letting him walk, they should have tried to move him.
Right.
But I guess it just depends on who you bring in. Because I think right now, despite all the stuff that you say about him negatively, and anybody says about him negatively, I think in order for this team, this iteration of the team right now to reach their peak, I think that Dylan Brooks needs to be there. But that those dynamics can change. And if you, like you said, you had went out and added a Mikal Bridges at the deadline, then I think it would have been much easier to let him walk. But they haven't done that yet. So I guess that's the question. What are you going to replace him with? And that's an interesting question, that is what he brings as far as the culture. Is that what this team needs going forward? Is that the direction they need to continue to go in? That's a really interesting question that Candace posed there. There's so many dynamics that go into that, man. Just see how it plays out. I got a feeling that his time on this team might be coming to an end. I don't think that was the case earlier in the season, if you had to ask the front office that, but I got a feeling that they're kind of heading toward a divorce. I think he might end up walking in offseason without compensation, which is a bad thing, but I just think it's evolved over the season. If I'm the front office, I think I'm not feeling the same way about him as I felt early on in the season. If you had asked me then, now I think I feel a little bit differently than what I would have said back in November, December.
Yeah.
David, what say you?
I think that anytime that you say stuff to the media, anytime that you see those quotes, it pushes other teams to give you their best.
Yeah.
So let's say a team is heading into a back-to-back, and they know that they got the Grizzlies on the second night of a back-to-back. Dylan Brooks saying some of the stuff that he said, I feel like teams are more likely to coast through that first night so they can come out and give the Grizzlies everything that they got, give the Grizzlies their A game.
Yep.
And that makes things tougher on the Grizzlies. Can I prove that is the case? No, I can't. I haven't done, I haven't watched film. I haven't gone down and really watched enough of the other teams to tell you that that's exactly what's going on. But on the floor, he is a massive impact player, and he is a positive impact player. And just like Isaac said, there's no arguing what he does on the defensive end of the floor. There are people that constantly run their mouth about Dylan Brooks. And I have on multiple occasions put stats out there for what he brings to this team, and the numbers don't lie. It's not cherry picking stats. It's not anything. You say that Dylan Brooks is not helping this team defensively. Okay, I'm going to go find defensive stats to show you that he is, and you can find them. You don't have to dig deep and cherry pick. Oh, well, against this player, he done this. No, you can go and find defensive stats where Dylan Brooks is a positive impact player. So letting him walk, letting him be away from this team, whatever happens, if he is not a Grizzly, I think there's going to be a hole. You saw what Paul George done to Zaire Williams. And Zaire is not just going to magically over the summer come back and be swole. He has the length, he has athleticism to be one of the best defenders on a team, maybe even the best perimeter defender on a team, but he's not there yet. And if you let Dylan Brooks walk, who are you going to go get? How many 6'7" wing defenders that have the ability to create their own shot are out there for them to go get? There's not many. How many years as Grizzlies fans have we sat back and said, man, the Grizzlies just need a big wing defender that can score? Dylan Brooks can't do that as efficient as what we would like, but he is a good wing defender and he can score. If you can find some sort of medium ground from where he's not taking 17 shots a game, if you can find him 8 to 10 shots a game, even if he's inefficient, all you need, and catch and shoot Dylan Brooks is the best version. I looked it up the other day, and it may have changed now, but the last time I looked at it, he was shooting like 61% on catch and shoot this year. So that version of Dylan is efficient, but the problem is the way that this team is designed, we don't get that version of Dylan Brooks enough. So is that the personnel? Is that Coach Jenkins being a robot, which he kind of mentioned that that's what he does? You know, there's a lot to it. It's when you're breaking down a situation like this Dylan Brooks thing, it's not just a surface. Like, you can watch a game where Dylan takes a bunch of bad shots and be like, dude, what the hell are you doing? Like, what is going on with you that makes you think that that is okay? But there's so much more to the game than just that surface level. So on the surface, somebody can look at it and be like, okay, if they let Dylan Brooks walk, it's not going to be that big of a deal. But if you dig in, I think if he walks and he's not on this team, if they don't go out and find somebody to replace him, then it's going to be a massive hole, and this team will not win as many games.
Well, no, they're going to have to find somebody to replace him. That's not a question. But yeah, I agree with a lot of your points. Because I actually think this year, I'm not sure that my issues with Dylan have. I mean, yeah, shot selection is always going to drive you crazy, but I think he's had a lot more games where he's been better than that. Where if Desmond is playing and Ja's playing, he hadn't taken as many shots. He still just hadn't been able to. He's just not been able to shoot well, just in general. But like I said, I was really coming at it more from a culture thing, just because he seems like, since he didn't play a lot last year, so a lot of the stuff that comes with Dylan in terms of his quotes, in terms of his, getting on other. I mean, in some extent, it's an advantage, but I also have seen plenty of games where Dylan will get on somebody's nerves, and then Devin Booker goes off 40 points. You know what I mean? Like, and it's not all on why Dylan is guarding them, but also like. You know what I mean? Like he almost like baits some of the elite players and and another thing is similar to Jaren, some of the elite players know how to get Dylan out of the game because you just use his aggression against him because he's so volatile. So anyway, mm-hmm. It's just things I've been thinking about just in terms of, I like what he brings to some extent, but I just given where this team is at right now, man, I'm just not sure that more of that is what this team needs. I think they need a little bit less volatility, a little bit less bravado, and a little bit more guidance in general at this point.
And it kind of feels like that's what they were trying to do with the trade deadline when, OG Anunoby. And yeah. I would have cried myself to sleep for a week if they gave up 3 first round picks.
Yeah, I wouldn't on that. I got a bad feeling that they're going to try to go back to him in the offseason. And that's, he's just not the guy for me to give up all that. I don't think he's that guy.
It was over as much now.
The health issues are it for me. Like he hasn't been healthy really.
Yeah.
Mikal Bridges, that dude's a tank. He plays 82 games I was fine a year. With that. Like,
man, I would have been giving up the chest for it.
Yeah.
The whole war chest.
So I was okay with that. But it feels like maybe that's what they were trying to do with the trade deadline and just couldn't get it done. So, we'll see. I think, and it's really tough to gauge because how much of what Kleiman was saying was fluff? Because how many years in Boston did we hear Danny Ainge, oh, man, I was super close to pulling the trigger to get this guy or that guy and this. like, it's easy to blow smoke whenever it's past time and nobody's going to put you on blast if that's not the truth. I'm not insinuating that that's what Kleiman is doing, but I always, like, I'm a little reserved. I can't say that I fully trust that that's 100% what he was doing. So, yeah, it's, I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know my thoughts on that. You know my thoughts on that.
He has a job to do, and his level of knowledge whenever it comes to how to do that job far exceeds what I'm able to do. So, yeah, I'm not going to sit here and just run him into the ground, but that, like, I just don't buy into. I'm not going to take everything he says as the gospel, I guess, is basically what I'm trying to say. Like, I like him. I like what he's done with this team. He's done a lot of fantastic stuff. So I don't dislike any of the things that he's done, but it's like, you don't fully trust the government. The government's not telling you 100% of everything that they're doing. And front offices are the same way. Like, they're not going to tell you 100% of what they're doing. And you can't show your hands to other teams. So I kind of get that. And I don't think that we're going to see. Go back to the Adams trade. The Grizzlies side of that trade was not leaked beforehand. People were like, oh, it was 3 days before. And I'm like, that wasn't from the Grizzlies side. You knew what the Pelicans were doing. You knew what the Pelicans were doing, but you didn't know about the Grizzlies side, because every other move that he's made, it doesn't, there's no leak. You don't hear about it. It's like, this trade's happening, and then boom, it's announced. So, yeah, we'll see. This offseason is going to be kind of I think this is what we're going to see. He's going to have to tip his hand in this offseason, because they have assets, but they're never going to have more assets than what they have in this offseason. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say that. That's what I want to see. So I hope he's telling the truth. I feel better about the direction if those things that we heard at the deadline were true, because before then I just didn't know if, because it just felt like they were 100% content to just go organically, like organic development. We don't need to add anything. This team is fine. They're the pieces that we have now. They're just going to grow into the team that's going to win the championship. And I know they're young. I was never on board with you being that good and you having resources to go out and build on that, and you just not doing it because you just want to let it grow organically. I was never on board with that. So I'm hoping the things that we heard at the deadline were true, because if that was true, I'm fine now. We just need to continue with that same the same mentality into the future. If that's the case, I don't want it to be OG Anunoby though, but I got a strange feeling. I've been talking about that ever since the deadline. I got a feeling they're going to make another run at him in the offseason, because I don't think Mikal Bridges is attainable. Brooklyn's not getting rid of that guy. I don't think that Grizzlies rumored to offer 4 first-round picks for him at the deadline. If that didn't get a good done then, and with the numbers that he's been putting up, they're definitely not going to change their stance on that. I don't think they're going to move him. So OG Anunoby is going to be a guy, I think, that's going to be out there again in the summer on the trade block. I think they're going to end up moving him this summer. I don't know how serious they really were at the deadline. Majuri is a guy that you're not going to fleece him in a deal. But I got a feeling that the price tag might come down a little bit, but yeah. I just don't think he's the guy. Like, if you've been conservative all this time with your assets, I just don't know if Anunoby is the guy that you want to go all in on. I just don't think he's the guy. David talked about the injury history, and I know we talk about Dylan Brooks and his inefficiency and things like that. I don't know if he's enough better than Dylan Brooks that the trade-off is going to be enough. You're going to lose Dylan and you're going to give up all these assets to bring him in. I don't think OG puts you over the top. It's just me. A lot of people disagree with that. I just don't think you want to lock yourself in with, okay, you got John on the big contract. You got Jared on the big contract now. You got him locked up. You got Brandon Clark locked up, and he's not going to be playing most of the year. That's going to be it. That's going to be pretty much your team. You're not going to have a lot of flexibility to kind of do any other thing. So if you're going to go all in on a guy, you need to make sure it's the right guy. I think Mikal Bridges, 100%. Timeline-wise, personality-wise, I think he would have fit this team and would have been great for him. OG is a guy who there's been some talk that he doesn't have the greatest attitude, doesn't have the greatest work ethic. There's thoughts that he wants to be, if not the number one guy on the team, a 1B guy, and he's not going to be that here. So there's some question marks with OG. I just don't think he's that guy. I know we're kind of getting out of tough subject, but I hope that's not the guy that they cash in on. I just don't think he's the one.
I don't think they'll have to cash in on him as much in offseason because, I mean, the biggest incentive for them, I mean, because he's got a player option. So I don't know how they
– That's another thing, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's going to bring that price tag way down. But I'll say this, my position on it in general, I don't think the Grizzlies are one move away anyway. I don't think, because even if they were to get the wing, I still think they need a bigger big. They still need a. I love Tillman. We'll talk. I'm sure. Man, I don't know. We've been on here for a minute. I don't know what time to talk about Tillman and the great things that he's been doing since the All-Star break. But like that, there's still a huge disparity in terms of like just size. In terms of this is they're not going to play Jaren at five. That seems like that's kind of out, and I get it. But that's out. So with that the case, that's you got your core guys, right? But in terms of what makes this team a championship roster,
yeah, they probably do need two guys.
I think there's still a move or two. I don't think it's just one move that you can put your chips in and say this is a championship team now. They're still around the margins of areas of improvements.
I semi-disagree with that. There are players that you could add to this team that instantly would make them a championship contender.
Yeah, but, are they available,
but those players are not named OG Anunoby.
Yeah, there's not OG Anunoby. That's for sure. Yeah, I don't even know. I don't even know if they're better than they are now with OG. That's my thought. I just don't think he moves the needle even close enough for you to just bust open your war chest for. I don't know. I like OG as a player, but I think he got overrated because of. He was just one of the biggest names that was out there at the trade deadline. Nobody was even talking about OG, and then all of a sudden, people were treating him like he was a 10-time All-Star or something, and he was this MVP candidate. Like, we got to get OG, and I don't know.
He's just young enough. He's still young enough that he fits the timeline. Like, it's not like he's an old man or anything like that, but yeah, there's some other stuff that I'd like to talk about, but we're already, like, I think an hour and five or an hour and 10 into it.
Yeah.
So we'll go ahead and wrap it up. We'll be back. The Grizzlies play again. What is tonight, dude? It's
tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night.
Lakers.
Yep. So we'll do a post game tomorrow night, and we can talk about some of this other stuff because Candace mentioned Xavier Tillman briefly there, and he's been phenomenal. Tyus Jones in that Clippers game was incredible. Mm-hmm. But some of the same stuff that we've been seeing all year. The Grizzlies have struggled closing games. They dropped 50 in the third, and then they took a nap in the fourth and ended up losing the game. So
they're 29. They're 29th ranked in the league in fourth quarters. 29.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I also want to talk some stuff about Desmond Bane and in fourth quarters and late in games too. So
yeah. We'll get to that. We will. What do they call shelf it until tomorrow? That's not the word I was looking for, but. We're in meetings and that sidebar. We're going to put it off till tomorrow. So we appreciate you guys listening. We hope you enjoy this episode. If not, we don't care. No, I'm just kidding. We hope you enjoyed it. Little humor, but you know, this is big stuff. We had to talk about it. And I know you like, if you're anything like me, you're sick of hearing about it, but there's just so much misinformation. And I hate it. Like, I have a lot of people that have been communicating with me throughout the day. And I'm like, do not believe everything that you're seeing on Fox Sports and ESPN because it's not all 100% accurate. So, anyway, I'm not going to get up on a soapbox before we close it out. You can get the show on Twitter at Ethos Grizzlies. I'm at NBA DWill21.
You can find me on Twitter at CandaceH901. Isaac, take us out.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Isaac_NBA. That's ISAAC_NBA. Go to @EthosGrizzlies. Give us a like and a follow. And I just want to say to Grizz Nation, man, just breathe, man. Just take a step back. I know it's been a heavy time with all the negative news, but I mean, this team is still young. We just hope Ja gets right because we know how talented he is. And he's the type of player that can lead this team in this city to an NBA championship. So you just hope he can get his mind right because the basketball stuff is, there's no question about it. on the basketball floor. I mean, he's that dude. He's that type of player that can lead you there. So just hope he can get right, man. But outside of that, man, the Grizzlies take on the Lakers tomorrow night. Oh, that's always a big game. Going to be out on L.A. It's going to be interesting to see if Skip, but Shannon will be at the game tomorrow night. You know what happened out there last time. So we'll see how that plays out. But I thank everybody for tuning in. For David Candace, I've been out of Memphis. Until tomorrow night, we're gone.
And that will conclude our Sports Ethos presentation.